Hello, hello, and welcome to this Friday show. It's Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, that's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, a busy sports Friday, and we're going to jump into it fast. You want to join the adventure, give us a ring, 718-664-9098. We'll get some of your emails if we can, but keep them coming at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out the website, all the info you need, a lot of football stuff, and that's at rayandtaytoday.com. And like always, we're very interactive. We tweet with a lot of people, athletes, you know, people in sports, writers, so join us. And, you know, a lot of fans. We tweet with Eagle fans, Jaguar fans, college football fans. It's fun. So Ray and Tay Today at Twitter and Facebook. Check us out, Ray. Just let them know, man. We're jumping in. Let's just jump in. Let them know.
Wow, we got a lot to talk about. So we're going to talk college football. Unbelievable top five matchup going on this weekend. We've got potential national championship implications. We're going to talk this past week's or yesterday's start of week seven, NFL football. We're going to talk this Sunday's NFL football. We're going to talk about the NLCS and ALCS. By the end of the weekend, we'll have the World Series set. So we're going to talk a little baseball. Wow. We're going to, towards the end of the show, bring you our segment that we're all, you know, we've been waiting for. I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly. Ray and Tay write letters. We're old school. We pull out our pen and we start writing letters. I'm sorry. So Ray's got somebody to apologize, a team to apologize to, and Tay's got a team to apologize to. We think you'll get a kick out of that. And, of course, we open up the show with breaking news in the world of sports. So let's jump right into it.
Yeah, man. Listen, I mean, right now – You gotta be excited. There's a lot of stuff going on in the sports world. We got some guys playing. Look, let's talk about the NBA. You got Andrew Bynum. He's pretty much cleared for practice, finally. Maybe he can help the Cavs, didn't help the Sixers. Our boy Carmelo Anthony wants to opt out. Knicks fans are a little nervous, even though he says he wants to stay. Then why are you opting out? So we got to keep an eye on that. You know, preseason basketball, you've heard about all the hype. Brooklyn and the Heat, they're getting ready for one another. A lot of talk and Twitter and back and forth in the media, and that's one last night. No big deal. But I don't know, Ray. I think the East is going to be – might even be, you know, bigger than the West in the NBA this year. And we'll talk about that on our preview on the 28th, Tuesday. Bogut might re-sign with Golden State. And you heard about Wiggins, the high school phenom who's now going to be in college at Kansas. They're saying that Adidas wants to just open up the safe, the truck, the stock market, and sign this guy to maybe one of the top sneaker deals and apparel deals ever. That's crazy. Crazy.
That's dangerous. I mean, there's really only been LeBron that's lived up to this hype and maybe even exceeded the hype as a college kid. How many college kids out there have started with this fanfare and actually lived up to it? So I'm a little scared about signing these kids. I mean, even Kobe, you know, eventually became Kobe, but I don't know.
Saying there's $180 million offer potentially could be a hoax. So, you know, we'll get into that. And you know what's exciting? Talking about college basketball, you'll see it tonight on ESPN, you know, along with the Louisville matchup against Central Florida. But Midnight Madness, and that is exciting. I can tell you when I was at Maryland, you know, all around college campuses, people get hyped up. The kids are ecstatic. It's the official start of practice for basketball season, and we will give you tons of college hoops on Ray and Tay today. So, look. There's not much else to get into, man. Let's get right into college football talk. Because like you said, number one, Sunday, first of all, the BCS comes out, the first rankings. Last night, number 10, Miami in a dogfight in the ACC battle beat North Carolina. You saw that, 27-23. Great game. But your boy threw four interceptions. What'd you think?
Miami was lucky. Miami was lucky. They finally are showing some momentum, and I don't know if they're looking forward or what, because Carolina was only 1-4 coming in. Miami was 5-0, but they needed all 14 of those fourth quarter points to win that game. So yeah, they better watch out. You know, if they're back, these are the type of games they got to win. They got to go to Carolina and beat the Tar Heels. So a little disappointing, but you know, at the end of the day, these are college kids. So they needed everything. Morris was 4 interceptions. Wow.
Yeah, Morris.
Crazy. He did throw for 300 yards, but it was 4 interceptions. That's tough to swallow.
Well, we'll see. They might move up. I mean, obviously, you know, all the teams ahead of them, you know, there's obviously someone's going to lose in that, you know, top 10 when Florida State plays Clemson. But talking about other teams who are not in the top 10, our first matchup, what do you think about the SEC battle, the Florida Gators, number 22, going to the team that I could also send an apology letter to, who I didn't think would beat Georgia, Missouri, at 14? Boy, did they jump up.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about this game, man?
You know, it's so funny because
– them Gators.
You hate to pick against Missouri because they've been beating everybody down, defying the odds, right?
6-0, 2-0 in conference.
Yeah, and their offense is pretty – I mean, it's literally almost comes down to, you know, an offense versus defense. I mean, these guys are – 8th in the country in points scored, averaging 45.7 a game. They average over 515 yards a game, does Missouri in offense.
Yeah.
So,
and Franklin, 571 yards.
Can Will Muschamp and his D lock these guys down? I mean, I don't
– A great defense, by the way, too, Florida has. A great defense, you know. But can they score with them? I guess that's the question. Do you think Murphy could put up the points? I mean, he's got 645 yards, only 5 touchdowns. But I guess for me, can Brown run? If Brown could get going and start running, you know, he's got, you know, 340 yards in the season, I guess I just don't know if their offense is explosive enough. And I got to be honest,
well, so
I went against Mizzou.
That's the key.
Right. No, I'm just going to say I got to be honest. I went against Mizzou against Georgia. But they've changed my heart. At home, I'm going to go with Missouri. 28-24. I got to.
Wow.
If I'm being honest.
Okay. I hate to do it to Missouri, but I think the Gators are going to pull it out. If the Gators can keep it a low-scoring game, it comes down to how many points Missouri scores. Because if Missouri scores 28-30, you know,
yeah, Florida can't do that.
And I don't think Florida can't do that. Yeah, Florida's only averaging 21.8 points per game. So that's not a lot in this, you know, in this SEC right now. So to me, I do think, though, that Florida and Will Muschamp keep this game tight. I don't love the quarterbacking situation at Florida, but I do think their D is decent. Their D is actually pretty good. The D is holding people to 13 points a game. So I think
tough
Florida gets into like a low-scoring slugfest like they had with LSU. I think that it ends up being something like 20-17 Florida. I think they go into Columbia and they win.
We differ on the SEC
matchup.
Into
Columbia, Missouri. Yeah, they definitely take
so,
care of business.
That's good, but will we agree on a classic matchup that we didn't know would be, you know, we thought it might be Stanford up ahead and still high-ranked if they didn't lose to Utah. But number 9, UCLA, the Road Warriors, as they went to Nebraska and, you know, spanked them after their player passed away, go to number 13, Stanford. I got to tell you, for me, when I look at this game, I think Coach David Shaw knows how to mentally get to his players. I was sort of surprised by the Utah loss, but like he said, Utah is a very good team. I think what you're going to see here is a shootout, just like they had with Washington, Both teams can score. I mean, UCLA is explosive with James and Evans. I mean, the quarterback is you know, Hundley is solid. He's not going to kill you, but, you know, he can throw the ball. I mean, over 1,400 yards. People are talking about him being an NFL prospect. And I want to see Hogan in this game sort of get to a place where it's on him and they win it because of Hogan. Montgomery cannot be stopped in the kick returns, all-purpose yards. He's probably, like, leading the nation, 514 receiving yards, and he just gets touchdown after touchdown, five TDs. I'm going to tell you, I think Stanford upsets maybe UCLA, and, you know, maybe next week we'll probably have, you know, George on, George Reister, former Jaguar and Oregon Duck, to talk about the Oregon-UCLA game. But I think, honestly, Stanford will bounce back in the top 10 and put it on UCLA 38-33. Stanford Cardinal.
Yeah, I like Stanford. I like Stanford in this game. I think that what people sleep on is how good UCLA is. I mean, UCLA has the fifth best offense in the country. They average almost 550 yards a game and almost 46 points a game. So UCLA can go up and down. Now, I think that Stanford's D isn't fantastic, but it's good. They have a good D. You know, Pac-12 teams typically aren't all that defensive-minded. But I think it comes down to Stanford making a couple critical stops and their safeties and their secondary, you know, making life difficult for Hundley. And I think that Evans, ooh, he can play. But my ultimate prediction is that Stanford takes out their frustration of losing to Utah last week, and they end UCLA's undefeated season so far, and Stanford takes care of business. Now, I was worried about this game last week because it was the game before, you know, the Oregon game, right? So I was like, oh, the last big game, you know, before the Oregon game. So I said, oh, I was worried about that. But now it's Stanford needs to take care of business against UCLA if they want to have a chance to go to a major bowl game.
And
so
it's a big game for UCLA
because
they're playing Oregon.
Yep. You could argue UCLA has a chance to be in the national championship picture. If they run the table and beat Stanford and Oregon in back-to-back weeks, then they'll be a top four team
definitely.
In the country. So the game means a ton to both teams. I think because the game's at Stanford, because Stanford's coming off a loss, David Shaw, Coach Shaw, if you're listening, I know you're going to motivate those Cardinals.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
friends
Stanford
of the show.
Stanford just feels like the clock ran out on them. They've got every reason to think that if they had 5-10 more minutes in that game, that they would have beat Utah. So I think Stanford continues the second half momentum, takes care of business, and they beat UCLA also in a high-scoring game. I think that's true, but not as high as you. I got Stanford winning 35-27.
Okay. You know, you could be right. It's fair. But we both got the Cardinal. Now, back to the SEC, the mega conference.
That conference
back
in
the top 25.
Is that
the
season 8?
Can I tell you? It's ridiculous. But how about number 24, Auburn, who, you know, kudos to them. It looks like they're building back the program. They're playing some good football at number 7, Texas A&M. And, you know, I got to be honest with you. This is one of those games where I just think at home, after what they've done on the road in the division, I just think Johnny Manziel is going to flex. I like Auburn's speed, and I think that they're tough. I just don't think they can score enough with Texas A&M. And one of the biggest problems is that no one has really found a way to slow down, you know, Manziel to Evans and just – I mean, you talk about
or just
play
Manziel
on Sunday.
To Manziel, right? Manziel running.
Well, you know, and that's listen. He's had more. Last year had more.
He really is.
Oh yeah, and more all-purpose yards than Cam Newton last year and Tim Tebow. He's already got 902 yards passing. Yeah, some guys have more, but he rushes well. I mean, the question is for me: can their defense do enough, you know, to really hold down what Auburn does? Marshall's solid, you know. He's look, the problem is with Marshall, he can get into throwing some interceptions. He's only got 4 TD passes. And my mistake, Manziel's got 1,700, he's got 1,300 passing yards. So he's already well on his way.
He's got 1,800 passing yards.
I mean, 1,800, 1,835.
14,
so, I mean, he's well on his way
14
to
touchdowns.
Yeah, another record season. I got to be honest. I think Texas A&M will do enough to stop the running back Mason, who's got over 500 yards and a lot of TDs, 7 TDs. But Auburn will make it tough in the first half, and then in the second half, Evans, he gets another 150-yard day. He's already got 737 yards and 5 TDs. I got Texas A&M winning a good game, but then they pull away. I got them winning 35-23. A&M?
Yeah.
Coach Sumlin.
I think Texas A&M's too tough. I think their offense, I mean, they're third in the nation in yards per game. And these guys and fourth in the country in points per game at 47.8. So they've had some cupcakes a little bit in the beginning of the season, but this team has got too much. The only way that Texas A&M loses is if they beat themselves, is if they have stupid penalties, a couple of turnovers, and they're just not focused. But it's hard to not be focused in the SEC, and especially when
right.
Auburn is a top 25 team. Auburn's 5-1 coming into College
yeah.
Station. So I like Manziel to Evans. I think that is a deadly combination. I think Manziel makes so many plays, whether it's on the run, whether it's a straight run, whether it's finding his big target, Evans. I like Texas A&M. I like them big. So I think Texas A&M takes care of business here. I think they win 35-17.
Okay, and now for our final game, classic. And I got to give a shout out to Washington. They dropped down with their loss, but they're 20 at Arizona State. Arizona State out here is pretty tough, man. I got to say, out here in the being in the Phoenix Tempe area, Scottsdale, I got to shout out Arizona State. They got a shot, but Washington is, they're pretty tough. But in this classic matchup, you got famous Jameis Winston running the Seminoles, Florida State. They've talked about him, hyped him up, and he's lived up to the hype. Number 5 in the country, going to Death Valley, baby, to number 3, Clemson, and Taj Boyd, Sammy Watkins and the boys. This is what it's all about. It's prime time. It's 8 o'clock. Everybody's going to be watching. I got to tell you, for me, I think Winston will do what he has to do. But for Clemson to win this game, Taj Boyd has got to be like he was against Georgia, like against South Carolina. He's got to be exceptional. I just don't know if Winston can do enough to slow down Clemson. To match, point for point. I mean, McDowell, we'll see how he does running. Florida State's defense, they've got to really step it up, and that's going to be a thing. They struggled against Boston College. They spanked Maryland, but they've had a couple games where Florida State has, given up a lot of points, and I think that is what's going to bite them in the butt this week. I think not only will Watkins explode, you got their other receivers that are solid, but I think McDowell can do enough out of the backfield. Maybe he finally gets an end zone. Hasn't scored at all this year. And I think Boyd's just too explosive. I think he shows the young, famous Jameis Winston that, I'm the kid on the block in the ACC. Slow your hype. You might be an NFL prospect better than me, but right now I'm your daddy. I got Clemson at home in Death Valley with the crowd going insane, winning an incredible game. High scoring. Both defenses are, you could score. 34-30, Clemson, and they are ready for a number 1 BCS ranking and top 3 ranking. As they're in 3 now, they can move up if Oregon falls at all, but they will be number 3 in the BCS rankings on Sunday. Clemson's going to win. Go Tigers!
So this game is very interesting. They played a shootout last year with FSU winning 49-37, but Clemson was up in that game big. They were up 27-13, and then Florida State just came back and whooped them in Tallahassee last year. So both of these teams can score. Both of these teams have explosive offenses, dynamic playmakers. It starts with the quarterbacks. Taj Boyd and Winston, famous Jameis Winston, are fantastic quarterbacks. I think between them they have 32 touchdowns and over 3,000 yards. So it is a great game to watch. Pull up your popcorn. Get ready. 8 o'clock, Death Valley, Memorial Stadium in Clemson, South Carolina. I think, like you do, that this will be a shootout that Clemson ultimately prevails. And I think because they're in Death Valley, if they have the ball, they'll drive the ball. Sammy Watkins, Taj Boyd will drive the ball down the field. He'll find Watkins. McDowell will do his, you know, just enough on the ground. I think they need a little bit more balance. But when it comes down to it, I like Taj Boyd, the senior, and his playmaking ability to pull out a high-scoring shootout. I might even go something like 38-34, where it takes a fourth-quarter, two-minute drill touchdown for Taj Boyd and the Clemson Tigers to win. But this should be a great game. I mean, when was the last time two ACC teams were in the top five? I mean, back – wow, it's been a while.
It's really great for the conference. I think the conference needs this, and it's a great way to sort of, you know, introduce Notre Dame next year with, you know, sort of just this amazing, you know, matchup and game, because, you know, this conference, it could be a little underrated. When you start to look at it this year, they've got some solid teams. You know, Miami, Florida State, Clemson, I mean, that's three in the top 10. So
your,
you know,
Maryland Terps were 25 for a minute until they got
stomped.
They were.
Stomped. But
well,
but
and the other thing, I mean, the other thing that'll make this interesting, though, is that Florida State stomped your Terps, but then they had a week off. So it's interesting because Clemson had to escape last week against Boston College, whereas Florida State's coming in very, very confident and had the week off. So that should be – that's an interesting little subplot there too.
Yeah, no. You're definitely right. So, listen, we're excited. We're going to be hyped up. I think everybody and their mama will be watching. I think, you know, I'm going to get my boy, Willie Beeman, still holding it down in the hospital. We love your prayers. William will probably watch the game with Daddy. You know what I'm saying? So we're gonna watch that one, and it's going to be we're gonna be excited. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back with NFL Week 7 talk. Ray and Tay. Ray and Tay. NFL. Yes, sir.
Yes, we're back. We're back to talk NFL Week 7. Can you believe
just
it?
Flying.
So we
just
had a
flying.
Game last night. We had a game
was
last
it a game?
Night.
Nah, well, I don't want to diss the Cardinals. I don't
you know,
diss.
That's your Cardinals right there. That's you know, Phoenix.
Nah,
my
poor son
Phoenix
Elijah
area.
He was hopeful, but I told him with, you know, Fitzgerald playing but a little banged up, Russell Wilson being so in the pocket, control, can get out of the pocket and do what he has to do. His receiver stepped up, and Marshawn Lynch, I was like, there's just no way to win this. There was really no way that Carson Palmer makes too many mistakes. 34-22. I mean, for me, I guess you could all sum it up with the sacks. Seven sacks on Palmer, the offensive line, and then he makes his mistakes. You know, throws for 258, but to me, you can't make, you know, the turnovers and then give up that many sacks. He needs, you know, he needs more protection. You know, I don't know. What was your feel? I mean, obviously, you know, the Golden Tate had a decent game, 4 for 77, but the Seahawks defense is just too much. And Percy Harvin might be back in 3 weeks for you fantasy folks out there. Hey, Seattle's undefeated, man.
Seattle's just too strong. I mean, here's a case where the better team won.
I mean, 6-1.
Really, it was the better team that was clearly the better team from the minute they left the locker room, right? And I think, to me, the telling stat was that the Arizona Cardinals rushed 18 times for 30 yards. So
yeah.
Once you couldn't rush, once you couldn't move the chains, then it really all fell on Carson Palmer. And then they just pinned their ears back and they teed off. And so the Seattle, you know, secondary we think is the best secondary in the league. And then you give, you know, you have that best secondary in the league back there. And then you let your linemen go at it and you you put together a 7-sack game. So you let Averill and Clemens and all of these cats, McDaniel gets a sack.
Bennett,
you know, so you've got just the perfect storm, right? So you watched his game and you thought there was no way. Once it started, even though it was only 17-10 at the half, but once it started, you thought there's no way the Seahawks are not going to win this game. They're going to be in total control. And
exactly.
There's no doubt about it. The better team won. And, you know, the Cardinals are about a 500 team. I mean, I really think so. I'm disappointed in Carson Palmer. I thought at least statistically he'll be able to put up much bigger and gaudier numbers. But that offensive line isn't great. That running game isn't great. And now with
Cooper,
Larry
not having
banged
Cooper,
up,
you know? When Cooper went down in the beginning of the season in a preseason injury for the offensive line, they traded Levi Brown to the Steelers. To me, I felt like they just didn't have enough to really run and protect Palmer the way they need to. He's not mobile. They probably need to get another quarterback. He's a stopgap. And that was, you know, pretty much their season right there because Cooper was a stud the first couple preseason games. So it's hard. And you got to play Ellington some more. My boy Rashad Menahal doesn't look that great in that offense. But Ellington, the young kid who's from Clemson, he's a beast, especially out of the backfield, getting the screen passes. So,
yeah, only got three
Cardinals
carries.
Three,
but he's a dynamic playmaker. They need to find a way to get him involved in the offense. They need
He's like Giovanni Bernard for the Bengals. He's like Giovanni,
right,
which is the perfect segue because next, let's move forward to Sunday, 1 o'clock. One of our, you know, games we're going to talk about is them Bengals, who dat, at the Detroit Lions. Detroit is popping right now. The Tigers are still alive. You know, you got the Red Wings and you got the Lions. And then we'll see what the Pistons do. So tell me, what do you think about this game? 4-2 Bengals, 4-2 Lions.
It's a big game for playoff positioning, right? The winner of this game is 5-2 and in a very good position to win the division. Let me start with the Bengals, right? Because this is the team that I've been pounding the table on and saying that this is their year to step up and actually prove that they're a legitimate team, especially in that AFC North when Pittsburgh and Baltimore, the perennial powerhouses, are there to be taken. So, the Bengals have a great, maybe the best front four in football. And then if they get decent enough play in their secondary and their linebackers play, you know, like Mike Zimmer can get them to play, then their D is going to be a top, you know, a top five, top 10 D. So then it comes back to Andy Dalton. Can you trust him at the end of games? And can you trust him to make plays? He's got one of the best receivers in A.J. Green in the game. And then between Tyler Eifert and Jermaine Gresham and then Giovanni Bernard,
he's got some tools.
Mohamed Sanu, he's got some tools. So this is a game that I believe that Andy Dalton is going to have to make plays. This isn't a game against Detroit in Detroit. I don't think this is a game where you can just manage the game and win it. You're actually going to have to go out there and make some plays. Now, Matt Stafford is, you know, he's lost Calvin Johnson a little bit because he's banged up, but hopefully he has his full core of players back and Reggie Bush is back healthy and everybody's raring to go.
Yeah.
So I think that at home, the Lions are also pretty formidable on defense, and their front four is pretty sweet as well. The Lions will be able to score. So I think the Lions put up 30, you know, let's say the Lions put up 30 points. So the question is, can Andy Dalton drive, you know, and maybe throw for three? You're going to have to throw for three touchdowns, four touchdowns to win this game. I'm not sure that he can in Detroit. So I actually like the Lions in this game. I like the Lions, 30-27.
30-27. Okay, well, I agree with, you know, your assessment. I think you're spot on. Both defensive lines are good. I just think the Bengals' defense is a little bit better. Their secondary, their linebackers are a little bit better than Detroit. Detroit, you know, tried to get some guys in free agency. I think my problem is it's Megatron's health. I mean, obviously, they already lost Nate, you know, Burleson for a while. He'll be back a couple weeks maybe if they're lucky. It's about the other receivers and the tight ends. I mean, look, we got Joseph Fourier doing all the dances. The nephew of Christian Fourier used to play for the Patriots. You know, he's, you know, look, three receptions last week,
well,
three touchdowns.
He's got, what,
so.
Six touchdowns? Six
yeah,
or seven?
He's,
I think he's got, what is it,
seven,
nine catches and
huge.
Six of them for touchdowns?
Dude, he's amazing. And so, to me, I think it's getting to him, getting to Pettigrew, letting Calvin Johnson do what he, you know, what he does. Hopefully Burroughs can step up, but getting Reggie Bush out of the backfield. And they got to bring back in Joik Bell. I mean, to me, Reggie's explosive, but you need that 1-2 punch where Joik Bell can really get going. I don't even know if Mikel Ashore is going to be, you know, doing anything for them this season or his health. But on the Bengals side, I love the combination of Giovanni Bernard and the law firm Green Ellis. You know, Green Ellis got 295 yards for the season. And the question is Dalton. He was, you know, offensive player of the week last week, had a great game. He's got, you know, over 1,500 passing yards, some touchdowns. I just agree with you. I don't know if they can just double cover A.J. Green. I don't know if on the road with that defensive line, if the Bengals will do enough. But they're so scrappy. I think they're going to stay in this game, and I actually think the Lions sort of pulling it out at the end, drive down, and Reggie gets a touchdown, and they win 27-26. I like the Lions pulling it out as well. 5-2
okay.
Lions.
All right.
You know,
well, one
that,
of these teams is going to be 5-2, looking good. The other one's going to be 4-3, not so great.
Definitely, definitely. So let's go to a division battle. And the Gronkinator is back. The New England Patriots at the New York Jets. And I'm talking about a Jet team that, you know, is definitely playing over their heads. Had a rough loss to my Steelers last week. We sort of both predicted it. Patriots, you know, 5-1. You know, they played each other early in the season. You know, Patriots did what they had to do in a tough game. The question is, can Geno do enough to sort of stay with Brady? And for me right now, Geno doesn't have Winslow. Santonio Holmes is still banged up. You don't know if Bilal Powell or Ivory or Goodson can do enough. But I'll tell you this. I think the Jets can run the ball in this game, and you got to keep Brady off the field. With Jerod Mayo being out, Will Fork being out, these guys are done for the season. The reemergence, you know, for fantasy football fans are pissed off, right? Ridley has done nothing all year, and then he comes back and has a great game last week. I guess I think Gronk, even if he isn't 100% playing, or, you know, he's been practicing for 5 weeks, but even if he's not a big threat in a game, him being there will be enough of a threat that Edelman and Tompkins and these other guys will continue, maybe even Austin Colley, will continue to do enough. And I just don't think Geno Smith can limit the mistakes because, you know, the secondary is solid for the Patriots. Even though Tlaib is banged up, we'll see, you know, whether or not he's going to be active. But Gronk being there will be the difference, and I think that the Patriots win a pretty good game, 24-20. I think they just get a special teams and, you know, pound the ball, get 200 yards maybe on the ground combined, and just the turnovers bite them in the butt. Brady 24, Jets 20.
So I look back to Week 2, and these two teams played in the rain in Week 2. In New England, and New England won 13-10.
Blame it on the rain.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to blame it on the rain, especially for our boy Tom Brady, who had his first-year guys. You know, they were trying to figure out if Zach Sudfeld was the man or Kembrell Tompkins was the man, what they were going to do. Danny Amendola just got hurt. Mulligan. Give me a mulligan. Everybody needs a mulligan. In any sport.
Amen.
It doesn't have to be golf. Just give me a mulligan and life. So that, to me, is a game that says that if everything is tight and you're playing in a close confines, if you're like in a sandbox, that these two teams can you know, play close. However, if the weather is good and Gronk is back and Stephen Ridley is back and Danny Amendola is coming back, and Julian Edelman is stepping up, and Kembrell Tompkins is showing that he's, you know, a player to be reckoned with in the next few years.
Definitely.
I think that the New England Patriots strut their stuff. The Jets are always good for one close game against the Patriots, but I think that game, when the Jets kept it close, they're not going to keep it close this time. No, don't get too excited. I mean, the Jets. you know, Geno had 214 yards in that pass game, and then but they still couldn't run. You know, Chris Ivory led them with 52 yards on the ground in that week two matchup. So I think New England wins this game. I think they win pretty easily. It may be close in the first quarter or two, but I think ultimately the Jets just can't score. So especially against this Patriots D, which is not bad. So I think the Jets kind of get blown out. I think they lose something like 30-13.
Wow. Okay. Give them a little spanking there. A little spanking.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, let's go to another division, the NFC East. From the AFC East to NFC East, this is fascinating. Nick Foles is the quarterback. Vic is kind of healthy, kind of ready, but I think it's smart to let him get 100%, then decide what you're going to do. You got the Cowboys on the road in the NFC East looking like maybe the best team in the division, but guess what? They're only 3-3, going to the 3-3 Eagles. So these teams both got here, you know, two different ways, but they both sort of win ugly and lose ugly. I mean, you just don't know. It's hard to get a feel for this game. I got to be honest, with Murray banged up, you'll see if Joseph Randle could do anything or if Dunbar, whoever. But Dez Bryant needs a big game. And I think the Eagles secondary is the perfect, cure for that, to sort of, you know, get him wheeling and dealing again for fantasy owners, get him hyped up. Romo is going to explode. But guess what? Nick Foles, I mean, Romo's, look, almost got 1,700 yards passing. But Nick Foles, ladies and gentlemen, he's solid. He gets rid of the ball faster than Vic. You know, no knock on the Vic fans, but even when they say the argument that, you know, with the read offense that McCoy does better, well, the stats didn't prove that. McCoy still got over 100 yards last week with Foles playing. And McCoy, you know, he's got 630 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns. He's you know, top 5 running backs in the NFL right now. And DeSean Jackson is having an all-pro season at wide receiver. 34 catches, 300, I mean, he's exploding, 589 yards. 5 TDs. I have him on one of my fantasy teams. I'm loving DeSean Jackson. So I say all this to say that I think in a shootout, because the Cowboys' defense is so banged up, Ratcliffe's gone, they let him go, they got all these different injuries. I think the Cowboys, for some reason, go into Philadelphia and pull out a slugfest, 30-27. How about them Cowboys?
Wow. Wow.
Going with your team,
all
man.
You mentioned all the arguments, and I was ready to say I agree with you 100%. So I agree with all of your arguments, except I'm drawing the conclusion that the Cowboys are going to lose.
Ooh.
And the Cowboys, to me, are a win-one, lose-one, win-one, lose-one, win-one, lose-one team. So
Cowboy killers will be happy to hear you say that.
They were disappointed by their loss, their heartbreaking loss at home against Denver. And then they go out and win last week. But now they go in a tough, tough road environment in Philly, even though Philly's 0-2 at home this year. The Cowboys, I think they come up short. And I think the problem with the Cowboys right now is balance. You know, they have Randall and Tanner potentially running the ball, so I don't think they're going to do anything on the ground, which means you put all the pressure on Tony Romo. And – We know
Whitten
moves the chains, but he's not a playmaker anymore. So it really comes down to Dez Bryant, Miles Austin, and these two new kids that are coming
out,
Harris and Williams. So the Cowboys do have some talent out there, and it really comes down to, can Philadelphia get to the Cowboys? Can they make them – you know, have 3 or 4, you know, short drives, 3 and outs. And I actually think that because the Cowboys can't run, they're going to be so one-dimensional, and eventually Tony Romo's going to be asked almost to do what he had to do against Denver. And I think he'll just fall a little short. I think that Nick Foles will be able to, in his second, you know, week in a row, be able to drive that team, be able to take the team up and down the field. Like you said, the Cowboys are banged up on D. DeMarcus Ware is hurt, and Ratliff they had to get rid of, and Spencer they've been without the whole year, and the secondary they demoted Morris Claiborne, and then they brought him back, and then Scandrick and Claiborne are fighting for that, you know, that second corner position. Sean Lee is the only, you know, good thing that's happening on that D consistently. So I think the Eagles win this game. I think they win it 31-27, Philadelphia. holding serve at home.
All right.
And by the way,
LeSean
McCoy, give him credit system for being just a fantastic player. And then this year, DeSean Jackson. I mean, those two might be the starting, you know, potentially the starting
Pro Bowl,
running back.
It's
and
amazing to
wide
see.
Receiver in the Pro Bowl for the NFC.
Yeah, and it's the offense too, Chip Kelly. But it's so funny, they still don't have as many plays a game as the Patriots and Belichick, you know. So Belichick still keeps it up in the 80s.
Yeah, don't tell
anybody. Quiet as cat. So look, two other games that I want to mention, but we got to get to the Broncos and we got to do this Texans and Chiefs. So if we have time, we'll get to you Niner fans and my Steeler fans with the rivalry. But let's talk about the Texans, man. They're 2-4. They're going to 6-0, undefeated. Kansas City Chiefs, 3-0 at home in that defense. This one is interesting to me because Case Keenum is starting. And, you know, Schaub is hurt, and, you know, God bless him. We hope he heals. And Yates, you know, he threw the pick six and kept their streak going. Foster, it just hasn't revved it up enough yet. I mean, he's got 531 yards, but, you know, he's not really getting it into the end zone. One touchdown for the season. So I think this is the type of game where the Chiefs could be looking ahead to their matchup against the Broncos and just, you know, sort of being at home, kind of comfortable and just chilling. But you know what? I don't know if the rookie going against Tamba Lee and Eric Berry and Dontario Poe, who could be the most improved player in
too.
The NFL. Houston is a beast. And he was a beast last year, made the top 100 players, you know, voted by the players on NFL Network. I think that with Avery and Bo and Charles and Smith not, you know, getting shook by J.J. Watt and their defense. And let's be honest, Cushing and the Texans team and even the secondary linebackers, they're underplaying. They're not playing up to their potential and what they should be doing. And I don't think that Foster and Tate will be able to run on the Chiefs. I think, unfortunately, the Texans will bounce back in this season, but not this week on the road. I think Alex Smith does enough and pulls out a dogfight of a game. And Charles, he'll crack 100 and a touchdown on the Texans, I'm telling you. And watch Avery for the end zone. They might stop Bo, but they're not going to stop everybody. I think Kansas City and the game manager and Andy Reid and the game manager, Alex Smith, do enough.
They go to 7-0? They
go to 7-0. They win 24-21. How about them Chiefs?
Wow. So, again, like the Cowboys and the Eagles, everything you say is legit. I have nothing to disagree with what you said. However, I cannot see the Texans going to 2-5. With the talent that they have and the expectations that they have, I mean, they still have a roster that I wouldn't mind managing,
trading,
coaching, or being the GM of, or trading too, if you want to acquire some of those pieces. I look at that roster and I say they're not a 2-4 team, and if they lose, this be a 2-5 team. And conversely, I look at the Chiefs and I say, you know what? They're good, but I don't know that they're 6-0 good. I don't know that they're the best team in the NFL. So, to me, the Chiefs, and here's the fear, again, with teams that don't run away, the teams that don't have great offenses, even though I'm a huge proponent of defense and defense wins championships, but
yeah.
When you're an offense that doesn't run away from people, they're always in the game. And if you play a team that's got some offensive talent, and I get it that Case Keenum is
second-year quarterback, first NFL snap.
First
believe
NFL
in
snap,
him?
First NFL start. I don't know that I believe in him, but he's got a big arm. And he's got a couple of studs out wide. He's got Owen Daniels. He's got
Owen's banged up. He's out for a while, Owen Daniels.
Oh, that's right. That's
he's
right.
Hurt.
So
they
he's got
Graham.
What's the backup?
Johnson.
The backup quarterback. Yeah. The backup tight end. There, so he's decent actually.
He's playing well.
And
yeah.
Between Tate and Foster, I think they have balance. Unlike the Cowboys, right, who aren't going to have balance running the ball. So I think the big arm with the talent at wide receiver and even Graham at tight end and the balance running the ball, I have a feeling that the Texans are going to do just enough and the Chiefs aren't going to be able to put up enough points. So even though I love the Chiefs' D, I think their offense, I mean, Jamaal Charles is really the only explosive player on that offense. I don't know what happened to Dwayne Bowe. So he's just too talented. And
he gets
double
covered every single week. Yeah, it's hard for him.
He's just it's heartbreaking because he could be one of the top – I mean, he could be Demaryius Thomas. Why not? Right? But he's not, and he's inconsistent. And then he'll give you one game where he's 15 for 220 and has three touchdowns. But Texans win this game. Texans win the game. I think the Texans put up 28. The Chiefs put up 26. And I threw a safety in there for the Chiefs. And I still think that the Texans win the game. Texans win and go salvage their season, basically go to 3-4 and knock the Chiefs from the undefeated ranks.
They surely better. So let's talk about Sunday night. You know, we still got our segment, I'm sorry, in baseball. So let's move along. And for Sunday night, he's coming home. He's coming home. Tell the world he's coming home. Listen, Ursae might have to eat these words. I was upset. Andrew Luck had me lose to Ray in hitting hard in real ball. Had a horrible week and still could have won it, but Andrew Luck did nothing with the Chargers defense, so I had to say that. But I think Andrew Luck plays one of his better games, but Von Miller's back, and Peyton's in town, and his teammates know how badly he wants it, and Knowshon Moreno is tough, and every week Julius Thomas and Welker just learn more and get more in stride with Peyton, and I think missing Ahmad Bradshaw. Bradshaw would be a key, I think, in this game, and I just don't think Richardson is explosive enough, and Donald Brown is playing better, and he's doing really well, you know, as a combo back with Richardson. But I got to be honest, I don't think the Colts can keep up the pace and score with them. And so, being brief, I'm going to quickly say the Broncos on the road in the house that Manning built, not Ursae, because he's got that ego as the owner. All respect to him, it's his team, but Manning put it there. Sunday night, 8:30 NBC, you better watch it. The 6-0 Broncos will go to 7-0, and the Colts, who, you know, had some big wins against Seattle and the Niners, will drop to 4-3. I say the Colts win 38-33. Good game.
Wow. Okay. So here's my thought. Peyton Manning wants this game really badly. He wants to win the game, but he also wants to put on a great performance for his hometown, ex-hometown Colts. And I do think that he will, but I also think he'll make a mistake or two. So I think he'll force it a little bit. He'll try to be too cute, too perfect. And I think that he'll try very hard to win this game, you know, outright on his own shoulders. And I do think they'll win. But I don't think you'll get a great game out of Peyton. I think you'll get a good game out of Peyton. So this would give the Colts a chance. The problem with the Colts is they can't run the ball. So Richardson can't quite get on track yet. They have some time. Hopefully they lose this game to go to 4-3 though. So that that's not great.
Which is fine in their division. They're still
in their division. It's okay. And they've had such an up and down year, right? They have this great win, you know, against Seattle 34-28, and then they follow it up with a loss at San Diego 19-9, where they just lay an egg. So I'm not sure the Colts can run with the Broncos. I think the Broncos are going to put up 30, and I don't think the Colts can put up 30. So I think you have a situation where the Colts backed up Jacksonville, and that was really – and Seattle actually put up 34 in Seattle, but I don't think that they can put up 30 on the Broncos. So I think the Broncos win this game 31-21. And so the Broncos just have too much on offense. Peyton, if it weren't for a couple mistakes, he would score 40, but I think Peyton has a fumble and an interception. I think just the nerves, the excitement of coming back home, trying to be too fine and too precise, but I do think they win.
Okay, before we get to, I'm sorry, real quick, we just got to give it for our fans that are diehards. The Niners, Tennessee, let's just give scores. I think at Tennessee, the Niners are going to be in for a dogfight, but they pull out a good win, 26-24. What do you got for Niners, Tennessee?
I think they win by 10. I think that I'm not scared of the Titans. I think against that defense, I think the Niners win 27-13. I think it's actually a blowout, two touchdowns.
Okay. And then Baltimore Ravens at the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers could find a way to get back in this division, especially if the Lions help them and beat the Bengals. I actually think the Steelers will have some momentum, continue it, you know, after they lost to the Jets, and not just because I'm a Steeler fan. I don't think Ray Rice is running the ball, and Flacco, his weapons, it's just not working. That's not it. Steelers win 24-20 in a fight, in a dogfight.
Same thing. I don't think the Steelers are as bad as that 1-4 record of theirs. I think they're 0-2 at home, which is kind of scary because, you know, Heinz Field is a great home field. I think the Steelers win a close game 20-17. Again, low scoring. Neither team's doing much on offense these days.
All right. So people have been requesting it. We've gotten some emails. Fans love our segments. But sometimes we just like to give you the picks and break down and analyze stuff. But sometimes it's fun to get back to our segments. So we're going to do our segment. Ray and Tay, really write a letter. We apologize. We say, I'm sorry. We're man enough to do it because if we talk some smack and we were wrong, we got to back it up and apologize. And, you know, it's okay to be a man and say, I'm sorry, and be wrong. So for me, I'm going to jump off the bat, and I'm going to go with the team that I predicted to be 7-0, and not the Broncos, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking about the Andy Reid, Alex Smith game-managing Kansas City Chiefs. I am sorry. I had the Chiefs this year, 8-8, 9-7, missing the playoffs, or 7-9, and not really, you know, not really making too much noise. But I got to say, I mean, Charles is, you know, right now, you know, he's not a top five with stats running back, but he's in the top six or seven guys. He's doing his thing. Alex Smith, look, you could say he's a game manager, but he's got seven touchdowns, and he just doesn't make huge mistakes. 1,300 yards passing, you know, I mean, look, 1,330 to be exact, but he's solid. And Charles, I got him in my fantasy league. He does big things, 475 yards, five touchdowns, and like we said, Dwayne Bowe, he's MIA. But it's okay because Avery and McGrath and all these other people are helping out. I'm sorry. I did not realize that it was just sort of coaching. No, you know, offense to Romeo Cornell, but look, they're healthy. Eric Berry, Tamba Ali, like you said, Houston. The defense is sick, and Dontario Poe has changed it because they can get pressure up the middle, and that changes the game. So Andy Reid, the Kansas City Chiefs fans, owners, the Sea of Red, the ghost of Derek Thomas, Tay is sorry, and the Chiefs will be 7-0.
So the team I'm sorry to is a team that I've disrespected the whole year, and not because I'm a Yankee fan. I called it like I saw it. I thought the Yankees would be terrible this year. I thought the Yankees would finish in fourth place. So it's not like I thought the Yankees would win the AL East. But I thought the team that would finish in fifth place in the AL East is the Boston Red Sox. And going from the last place finish in the AL East, they said, you know what, Ray, you're out of your mind. They won 97 games. They had the best record in baseball. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry to them as a team, and I'm sorry to them as a collection of players. You know, I saw their outfield, and I saw Gomes, Nava, Victorino, Ellsbury, and then I saw Bogarts and Steven Drew. Napoli and Pedroia are fantastic. So I thought, wow, this team is not going to do it. But they pitch, and they pitch, and they pitch. And they're the best hitting team in the league. So they got that spunk that they had in 04 and 07. And this team is just a team to be reckoned with. And I thought they would finish fifth. I thought they would lose to the Rays. I thought they would lose to the Tigers. So every step of the way. So if you're a Boston Red Sox fan out there, I guess I was wrong. But you want me to keep doing what I'm doing and keep disrespecting your Red Sox. So to the 2013 Boston Red Sox, even if your season ends now, even if Detroit comes back and wins two games, I'm sorry. I mean, I underestimated you and every step of the way, and you guys were absolutely legit. So Boston Red Sox, I'm sorry. A special sorry coming out from a New York Yankee fan. But I admit, I'm sorry. I underestimated you.
That's deep-rooted right there. So, I mean, look, it's the perfect segue. Ray did it. Let's talk about the NL and the ALCS. These playoffs, Ray, have been amazing. I mean, 3-2, the Cardinals are going home, and 3-2, the Red Sox are going home. And St. Louis, oh, man, this is, you know, it's Waka against against Kershaw. And so the question is, 8:30 tonight, everybody's going to be watching. You know, they're on TBS still. This right here is the why he could get the biggest pitching contract ever, even more than, you know, your boy from the Mets, Johan Santana, and before more than Kevin Brown. He's a horse, and he's got to prove it. I think the Dodgers will win, and then it will get to Wainwright, and we'll see who they throw out game seven for the Dodgers.
Ryu.
But,
yeah, the Dodgers
definitely Ryu. Okay,
either.
All right. I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know. He, you know, you never know if he could change it. But Don Mattingly, you know, I wish him the best. I picked the Dodgers. My son William from the hospital bed, he picked the Cardinals and the Tigers. So we'll see what Willie Beam is doing. But I honestly think, look, these games have been awesome. And you know, Puig with some nice clutch hitting. You know, Greinke got a hit, you know, as a pitcher, you know, driving in runs. These guys have been amazing, and they're crawling back and fighting back. And I think the Dodgers find a way to not just win tonight, but I think they come back and even get on Wainwright, and they still win this series. I'm going with Love You Blue, the Dodgers, you know, for Tommy Lasorda and Rick Monday and all
okay.
the boys. I got to go with the Dodgers. I think they're going to pull it off.
Wow.
Kershaw,
okay.
Maybe a three-hitter for Kershaw.
I think the Dodgers win tonight, even though Waka, quiet as kept, almost picked the perfect game, last game of the season, and then has been fantastic in the playoffs. And this game, these two pitchers were separated by an unearned run, right? Both pitchers pitched great.
Amazing.
And so this is fantastic. This is baseball. If you're not loving this, then you don't love baseball. You're not a baseball fan, because these playoffs have been fantastic, and these LCSs have both been fabulous. So I actually think that Kershaw pitches just a little bit better, and the Dodgers are scared to go to their middle relief. So they want to go Kershaw all the way, or have Kershaw, after about 120 pitches, hand the ball right to Kenley Jansen. So if they're able to do that, and Kershaw's able to give them 7 2/3 or 8 full innings, I think the Dodgers win this game and push it to a game 7. So in that scenario,
Wainwright is tough.
I picked the Dodgers to go to the World Series. But I tell you what,
if it
comes down to a game 7 in St. Louis with Adam Wainwright pitching for the Cardinals against Ryu, who's a good pitcher, but
it
it's number
scary,
3 against
but
number
I still
1.
Think they'll do it.
It's number 3 against number 1. I got to change my pick. I don't like doing it, but I got to change my pick and go with the Cardinals. I got to go with the Cardinals. So I like the Dodgers tonight, and I like the Cardinals on Saturday.
And I'm
going
to stick with my pick, even though, you know, it's easy to go with Wainwright in St. Louis. So let's talk about the Red Sox.
In the American League, you got also a great matchup between Max Scherzer and Clay Buchholz, and they weren't able to hit Scherzer until the last couple innings at Fenway. But I think back home, or back in Boston, those Red Sox are tough.
Scrappy.
God, Napoli's they're tough.
Fear the beard.
Here's the thing. If Detroit wins this game, I actually think Verlander wins on Sunday. So it comes down to this game, the opposite of the other series, which I think that the home team will win. I think that if Scherzer and Verlander pitch to their ability, I think they win the game. So I'm actually going with Detroit. So even though I've picked Boston and I've written them an I'm sorry letter, I think you have possibly the two of the three, Kershaw in there. I might have to say I'm sorry again on Monday, but I think against all odds, Max Scherzer, if you give me two games to win, even on the road, and I have Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander this year, I like my chances. I like my chance. And Detroit can hit. They just need to wake up.
I'm not mad at you.
Boston.
I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
I think they force it to a game 7, but I think Boston I just think Boston will be clutch, whether it's Johnny Gomes, Napoli, Big Papi, at home, the momentum. I think the crowd will keep them, and I say that it winds up being the Dodgers and the Red Sox. Ray and Tay, that's what I'm going with.
Oof.
We'll be back on Monday,
either way,
man.
It should
I'm
be an
telling you.
World
oh, yeah.
Series.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. And we'll give our World Series picks on Monday and, cover the weekend and these great games. You know, hey, maybe even the Browns upset the Packers this weekend. Who knows? So, anyway, thanks for listening. Great show. Thanks for talking sports with friends. And, hey.
Have a great weekend. Enjoy the sports.
Yep. See you on Monday. Willie Beeman, Daddy's coming to see you soon, buddy. Get healthy.
Great. We're out.
Ray and Tay.
Ray and Tay.
Ray and Tay.
You know what? I gotta do it. Ray and Tay, we spit it twice a week. It comes so unique. The sports are magnifique. Check my technique as I spit the freestyle off the top of the dome, and I'ma cause y'all to smile. It's more than sports talk, and no pork on my fork, and you know how I walk. It's straight up New York. Ray and Tay, 95th Street all day. The 90s cab, and you know we don't play. The sports knowledge is deeper than college, and you know some we're gonna give you some stuff that's not college. Call it alcoholics, none of that, but we bring you the truth and predictions that are all that.